helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. Most people recognize that the Fourth Amendment protects our right to privacy. Well, actually, it's a tool to protect you from unreasonable searches and seizures. Now, the story about why we needed this protection is an important one, and the hero at the center of the story is an attorney by the name of James Otis. If America wishes to be free, we'll need a 21st century James Otis to stand against the tyranny that threatens our right to be secure from unreasonable searches and seizures. Well, hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study. I am so glad you could join me. I'm actually on the road. That's right. I'm recording this in Bismarck, North Dakota, so that you can enjoy it while I'm out on my Blessings of Liberty tour. Hopefully, you'll keep an eye on where I'm out and about. You can find more at constitutionstudy.com. But I've been noticing a trend in the news that reminds me of the importance of what Mr. Otis stood for and why we really need another one here today. Now, our story goes back to the 1760s. At the time, the British were trying to raise taxes. And one of the things that they did, well, was to send out officers with general warrants or writs of assistance. These basically were blank warrants. It was a judge saying, okay, go ahead and search. And if you find any contraband, then you can fill in the blank. This is what you were searching for, and use that as a approval to now arrest the person because, well, you found contraband. Now, Mr. Otis was engaged as an attorney to challenge this, and he actually became famous in the colonies for his fight against these writs of assistance, these general warrants. And his argument became so well known because I believe it was John Adams actually took notes while he was giving his argument. And I want to quote some pieces from it because I think it's important for today. He goes, "This writ is against the fundamental principles of law, the privilege of a house. A man who is quiet is as secure in his house as a prince in his castle, notwithstanding all his debts and civil processes of any kind." A short while later, he said, "I take this opportunity to declare that whether under a fee or not, for in such a cause as I may despise a fee, I am willing to my dying day oppose with all powers and faculties God has given me all such instruments of slavery on the one hand and villainy on the other as this writ of assistance is. It appears to me the worst instrument of arbitrary power, the most destructive of English liberty, and the fundamental principles of law that ever was found in an English law book." And that's just a brief excerpt from Mr. Otis's speech, his tyranny, his discussion in the court about the tyranny of these writs of assistance. Now, move forward to the 21st century. Now, I've been saying for years that the IRS audit is pretty much by definition a writ of assistance. It is a claim to search your records, your books, your invoices, searching for some wrongdoing that you may have possibly done, and then, when found, uses evidence against you. To me, this is not simply a violation of the Fourth Amendment, but also a violation of the Fifth Amendment, because you are basically declared to be a witness against yourself in preparation for a criminal trial. And this is exactly what the Fourth Amendment was designed to prevent. Just to refresh everyone's memory, the Fourth Amendment says, "The right of the people to be secure in their purses, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated." Now, let's stop there for a second and recognize. We often hear about the right to privacy. If you watch any crime dramas or you follow any of the courts, you'll often hear situations like, well, it was the police could search it because it was out on the street. You had no expectation of privacy. Again, this comes from the courts, and they've kind of redefined this Fourth Amendment to be a right to privacy. Now, yes, the Fourth Amendment does protect your right to privacy, but not directly, because it protects your right to be secure in your persons, houses, papers, and effects. Now, in the 21st century, this gets a little weird, right? Because, well, okay, we still have persons, and we still have papers and houses, but many of our papers are actually now digital documents. And even though those would fall under the effects, too often they're ignored. And you have the whole third-party principle the courts have come up with. But the statement here is that is, to me, most important is, you are to be secure from unreasonable searches or seizures. And when you're talking about searches, we're not talking about, well, you know, it was out in the open so they could see it. We're talking about the act of government searching for information about you. It should not matter where it is stored. It should not matter how it is stored. Is it reasonable in a specific situation for the government to search persons, houses, papers, effects, anything? Now, in general, there are considered two reasons why you it would be reasonable for government to search. The first is what's called an exigent circumstance or an urgent circumstance. The classic example being, smoke billowing out of a house. The police don't need a warrant to enter to see if anyone's inside. Same if you hear cries for help, right? If they're outside walking down the street and they hear someone crying for help, they can go in and search. There are situations where you have what's called maybe a wellness check, where rather than getting a warrant, there's a probable cause that somebody may need assistance then, and they've asked for a wellness check, but I'm not here to talk about that. Now, the second thing that makes a search or a seizure reasonable is a warrant. And the Fourth Amendment goes on, says, and no warrants shall be issued, but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. So let's go to this Otis Warren scenario, and we're dealing with the collection of taxes. And consider in the 21st century now, the IRS. Now, I've already mentioned that an IRS audit is an unreasonable search. Unless they get a warrant, what is their probable cause for searching? I want to get this point across implicitly. Government has the burden of proof. You do not need to prove that the search is unreasonable. They have to prove that the search is reasonable. That's what the Constitution says. If they're going to search, they have to have either an urgent circumstance where waiting for a warrant is just impossible. I don't mean impractical. I don't mean it makes their life difficult. I mean it is unreasonable. If someone is in mortal danger, to expect law enforcement officers, peace officers to stand around waiting for a judge to sign a warrant is not reasonable. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the government coming to you to see if you've paid all your taxes. This is exactly the situation that led to many of the writs of assistance, I believe James Otis was fighting against. And now, of course, we have the new Inflation Explosion Act. I know they call it the Inflation Reduction Act, but it does nothing about reducing inflation. And of course, you've all heard there's going to be 87,000 new agents, new IRS employees. Some of them will be involved with audits, some not. Now, of course, the promises come from the White House that no one making under $400,000 a year would face an audit. I don't believe that, and I don't know a lot of people who are familiar with how the IRS works really believes that. But what's interesting is the Congressional Budget Office estimates that there will be $4 billion in revenue over the next 10 years, traced in part to these new audits. So again, stop and think for a second. These audits, the purpose of these audits is to, quote, increase revenue. They want more revenue, which is why they're targeting the people for audits. And they agree. The CBO says that they're going to raise this $4 billion by targeting taxpayers making less than $400,000. Now, I guess the logic that the White House is trying to use is that, well, they may report less than $400,000, but we can probably find more income for them, so they will be over the $400,000 limit. But notice the logic here. This is, we don't have proof, we don't have any probable cause that these people have not re- recorded their taxes properly, but we need more money. So we're going to audit them because we figure, based on historical information, as we audit, we're going to find stuff to collect more taxes on. This is literally no different than what the British were doing in the colonies. They needed tax revenue, so they will send out agents, swarms of officers with these general warrants, these writs of assistance, in order to find something that they can charge the American people with in order to gather more revenue to pay off all their bills. And as another example of just what this is all about, the IRS official in charge of these 87,000 new agents, well, it's the same person that was involved in the Obama-era targeting scandal. In fact, IRS Commissioner Rittig has appointed Nicole Flax to be commissioner in charge of IRS's Large Business and International Division. You may remember that in 2014, Ms. Flax was among seven IRS agents who suddenly reported that their computers crashed, so they were unable to provide information to Congress that was investigating the IRS targeting Tea Party groups and other conservative groups when they've applied for tax-exempt status. So, that, at the beginning, that doesn't smell too good. But I want you to stop and think about this. We're having the IRS is going to send out, now not all 87,000 are going to be, I believe, are going to be out actually conducting audits. But think about it. You have, you get that letter from the IRS that says, come in and provide all this data. How many of you have thought, I'd be willing to show up with this data once you provide me a warrant? Not an IRS audit form. I mean an actual warrant signed by a judge with probable cause where you were specifically saying what it is you wanted me to provide for you. You see, that's why I refer to the Constitution as a tool. You have a right to be secure from unreasonable searches and seizures, but it doesn't do you any good if you never stand up for it. If you never turn to that government official and says, gee, you want this information, I will be willing to let you, I will not prevent you from going after it once you show me the warrant, once you tell me what it is you're looking for. And that's this important scenario. We've gotten back to writs of assistance because too many Americans don't understand their rights as protected by the Constitution. You know, think about it. How many people do you know if law enforcement showed up at their door would say, you can't enter without a warrant? Or if someone came to arrest them, would want to see the warrant. But as soon as the IRS shows up and says, hey, show us your books, they simply turn them right over. This is part of the education I believe the American people need in understanding their rights. Government has the burden of proof, not the people. If the government wants to search your records for tax evasion, they must have some probable cause. They cannot go on a fishing expedition. But it only works if we the people recognize that and push back when they show up and say, hey, show us your data. Show it. Give us your papers. No, where's your warrant? But I fully expect, based on recent history, that the vast number of the American people that the IRS sends that letter to that says, show up at our office, bring your documents, prove yourself innocent before us, will simply comply. Some because they don't know any better. Some because they sit quivering in fear before a government agent. Because the Internal Revenue Service has become such a fearful actor. They are, in many ways, no different than the British Redcoat standing at your door saying, let me in to search because I have a piece of paper that says I can, without even though that paper is not valid. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't expect, even if you were to stand up, that all the agents would simply bow down and recognize. But it's an important step to know your rights and to inform them of the violation of your rights. And furthermore, the violation of federal law they are committing. Because Title 18, United States Code Section 242, requires a willful depriving you of your rights. Well, if you inform them what your rights are, you inform them how they are violating them, how they are depriving them of your rights and of the law. They cannot claim that they didn't know any better. Now, again, doesn't mean the courts are going to listen, but we have to do the right thing simply because it is the right thing. Because letting wrong get its way because it's easier only leads to more and more wrong. Evil thrives when good men do nothing. So it's time for the good men and women of this country to understand their rights and to learn to hold their elected, not only their elected representatives, but all the agents using the power we've delegated to them, accountable for their actions. Hold them firmly in the grip of the Constitution. Now, I have to take a break, but before I do, I want to remind you, not only, yes, I'm out on tour, I'm at the on the Blessings of Liberty tour. You can find out more at constitutionstudy.com/tour. If I'm going to be in your area, I hope I get to see you. If not, please fill out the form and let me know that you'd like me to come visit your location. And if you can donate to help pay for all the bills, that would be absolutely wonderful. But another thing we need to do is we need to keep ourselves healthy. And there's a great site called HealthyCell.com. They've reinvented the vitamins. First time it's happened since the 1930s. Now, they got a lot of great products, but one I'm using it right now is the Immune Super Boost. See, I'm traveling. I'm meeting a lot of people, shaking a lot of hands. It's easy to get sick under those situations. So I'm taking my Immune Super Boost to keep my system healthy. It contains over a dozen supplements to boost your immune system. And as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order. All you have to do is go to HealthyCell.com and use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. That's right. Go to HealthyCell.com, put anything you want in your cart, use the code OUTLOUD at checkout, and they will give you 25% off your first order. So again, that's HealthyCell.com. Use the code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order, and we'll be back after this break.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
You already know Genesis plus HOCL is your best defense against viruses. But did you also know it's the most powerful weapon for eliminating airborne mold, too? Customers are raving about the Genesis Fogger's ability to tackle mold problems and the bad smells that go with them. And we all know mold is a hazard to your health. There's no airborne invader that Genesis can't handle. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach our rising generation to be free. And today we're talking about the need for, well, our own James Otis, people that are willing to stand up and defend their rights against these writs of assistance being used by government. We've already talked about the Fourth Amendment and its requirement that searches be reasonable and that warrants be based on probable cause supported by oath or affirmation. And that's what I want to get into next, because probably, you know, one of the more infamous at this point instances of this involves the Trump raid at Mar-a-Lago. Now, the government had a warrant. That's not in dispute. The question is a valid warrant? See, the Fourth Amendment doesn't simply say, oh, there must be a warrant. It says, no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation. Now, this, again, is important for a couple of reasons. One, government has to show that there's a probable cause for their search. Now, in looking at the warrant and the affidavit, at least the unredacted parts I've been able to see so far, I haven't seen a lot of probable cause. I've seen a lot of assumptions. I've seen people saying, well, in my opinion, yes, there's classified information there. Again, there's the last time I looked at the affidavit, it was highly redacted. So maybe there's a reason for probable cause in, you know, under those redactions. That's possible. Then again, it's also possible that the FBI just said, yeah, we think it's there, and the judge rubber stamped it. I mean, let's face it, this is a federal magistrate. I don't even think this is a full article. I don't know if even a full Article 3 judge. But whatever the case, yes, a warrant was issued. And as I've told my family in the past, if a government agent comes to your door and requests access, you ask for the warrant. If they don't have a warrant, I've been told by lawyers, you never consent to the search. You don't interfere with the execution of a warrant, but you don't consent to the search, because that has legal ramifications. So here you have, just put yourself, okay, pretend it's not Mar-a-Lago. Pretend it's your home. And somebody, some government actor shows up and requests a search. And they say, hey, we want to search your property. No. Well, we have a warrant. Let me see the warrant. Yes, you have a right to see the warrant for a couple of reasons. One, you want to make sure it's a valid warrant. If there's no probable cause, if there's no oath or affirmation, then it's not a valid warrant. Because the oath or affirmation is extremely important. See, it means that someone had to, under penalty of perjury, swear or affirm that what they're saying is true. Why is that important? Well, if someone says, yes, I saw my neighbor storing contraband in their back shed. Well, if that's proven to be a lie, the person who forcibly swore or affirmed, they can go to jail. There's a criminal penalty for lying. That's why the oath or affirmation portion is important. So you need a warrant, probable cause, oath or affirmation, but also particularly describing the place we search and the persons or things to be seized. Now again, when I looked at the warrant from Mar-a-Lago, it seemed pretty vague. If memory serves, it pretty much said anywhere you could store a document. I guess in the FBI's mind, that included Melania Trump's, that included the bedroom, the wardrobes, everywhere. Now, that's not very specific now, is it? There was some specificity. These were these buildings and these offices. So that to me was a little, not so sure. But also describing the persons or things to be seized. And in this case, they were seizing documents. Well, what documents are they looking for? Why was one of Trump's passports included in those? Why was personal papers? Why does it appear that private privileged documents between Trump and his lawyer was also seized? Now, again, this becomes very important because the FBI agents who... Again, if it's proven that their search was conducted beyond its legal scope, that they seized stuff beyond their legal scope, they are in criminal jeopardy. They have deprived Mr. Trump of a right protected by the Constitution of the United States. Now, should I think that an FBI agent should be arrested for what may have simply been a mistake? No, but if there's evidence that they were intentionally targeted, yes. If this was used to get their foot in the door and then expand the search to what they think might get them what they're looking for, Well, then, yeah, that's a problem. Because if this warrant was effectively a watered-down writ of assistance, the idea of we will search because we think there's stuff there. There's probably stuff there. We're going to search. And then when we find the evidence, well, then we'll make it all okay then. That's dangerous. And what I'm worried about is, okay, a lot of people say, if they can do this to Trump, what could they do to us? My question is, if they've done this to Trump, how many of us have they already done this to and we just didn't know any better? Or it just wasn't high profile enough for people to put it in the news? But by doing this to such a high profile person as former President Trump, that's opened up an interesting can of worms. For example, now we have this special master, and I still want to dig into a bit more about the special master later. Now, what is a special master? Well, as I understand it, the idea of a special master was when a judge was dealing with a case where they were not an expert in that part of the law. Often you see it in financial cases where they needed somebody that was an expert not only in the financial law, but in the finances itself. Beyond what the judge understood, they could appoint a special master, someone with specialized skills to review, to advise the judge. Now, in this case, I don't know if it's specifically someone who is specialized in the classification laws and whatnot. I don't know. But the idea was we want a disinterested third party to look at this to advise the judge. And since the question is, are these documents classified? Was Trump illegally in possession of classified documents? That is what should be the standard for the special master. So we have this third party that's going to look through the documents and see, has the Department of Justice, in effect, not necessarily made its case, but yes, these are classified documents. These documents are swept up and they shouldn't have been included. My guess is that's what's a lot of what's going to go through there. Now, here's what's interesting. The Department of Justice doesn't want to wait for the special master. They filed a request to continue reviewing documents that are alleged to be classified records that the FBI seized from Trump's residence while the special master is going through them. Now, thankfully, District Judge Cannon denied that request, which is quite appropriate. How do you go searching for stuff that has not yet been determined if it was legally obtained? That would be a gross violation of former President Trump's rights. The other was they wanted to squash the special master. And I find it telling. Again, this is inference. This is not evidence. This is not proof. But the DOJ seems to be fighting very hard to keep someone else from verifying that their seizure of these documents was legitimate. Now, is that simply a natural reaction? Right? It's quite possible, right? We don't like having our decisions challenged. We don't like having our presuppositions brought up for review. So part of it is probably just a natural desire not to slow things down, not to have our decisions questioned. I expect some of that. It is not proof of malfeasance, but you know, again, we have this push to let the DOJ be part judge, part jury, and part executioner. Judge Cannon wrote, "The court does not find it appropriate to accept the government's conclusion on these important and disputed issues without further review by a neutral third party in an expedited and orderly fashion." The idea of we need to rush through this, we can't have the special master, I agree. This is a step in the right direction. But of course, Trump isn't the only person, high-profile person, to have information seized recently. By now, you probably know that Mike Lindell had his cell phone taken by the FBI. Now, initial reports were that the FBI had a subpoena, but apparently they actually had a warrant. And the warrant wanted to see, called for the seizure of the physical cellular telephone assigned to his number, and all records and information on the Lindell cell phone that constitute fruits, evidence, or instruments of identity theft, as well as intentional damage to a protected computer and or conspiracy to commit identity theft and or to cause international damage to a protected computer. Now, I'm not exactly sure what they were looking for. I haven't seen the warrant. I haven't seen the probable cause. But it wouldn't surprise me. See, Mr. Lindell received a letter from Dominion Voting Systems warning of litigation. They were going to sue him for spreading claims of election fraud. I've seen much of the some of the evidence that Mike Lindell has, and it certainly warrants investigation. But this is talking about identity theft and damage to a protected computer. So I'm not quite sure what is going on here. What I do know is that, according to reports, Mike Lindell was in a fast food drive-thru when he was surrounded by FBI. And apparently, I don't know if he was presented with a warrant, he had they confiscated his cell phone, which, by the way, apparently is how he runs all of his businesses, is through his cell phone. Not here to comment on that for my IT career, but that was that's the point. Now, why I bring this back up is because it's Mike Lindell, and because he has a bit of a bombastic personality. I don't begrudge him that. He's also got a lot of money. Because now what he's going to do is he wants to sue both the United States and the FBI. Now, I'm curious to see what actually comes of this. In other words, what is he alleging? Does he allege that the warrant was invalid, that this was a criminal prosecution or, an unjust prosecution? I don't know. Again, we'll see. But the very idea of having government agents coming up and issuing a warrant. And again, why in a fast food drive-through? That's another one. I'm not sure. There's something going on here. But what we're seeing is more and more examples of federal agents acting more like the Gestapo. Now, again, if they had a warrant, if it was based on probable cause, support of the oath or affirmation, it appears to specifically identify his phone. But they went on to say that it would include any or all records and information that might identify, that might be evidence or fruits of identity theft. How can you tell that beforehand? In other words, it's one thing to say, well, we're looking for evidence of identity fraud. Okay, where are you looking for it? What documents are you looking to seize? Well, anyone that might be there, that's not specific. That's not, again, that becomes a concern because now it becomes, well, we're just going to search all your records looking for anything dealing with identity theft. That becomes a general warrant, doesn't it? It tacks really close to being a writ of assistance. And then we find out that an associate of Mr. Lindell, Douglas Franks, has also been served a warrant and also had his cell phone confiscated. Now, again, they had a warrant. I know nothing about the warrant. I don't know if it was a valid warrant or not. I don't know if it was based on oath or affirmation. I don't know if it was specifically identifying what it was to be seized or how detailed it was. But let's just say the FBI doesn't exactly have a great track record, and we'll talk a bit more about that on the other side of the break. But let's also consider this point. See, in order for a warrant to be issued, it must be signed by a judge, which means the judge must look at the probable cause, the oath or affirmation of the probable cause, must look at the details of the request for searches and seizures, and determine if it's valid. See, this is a check on the executive branch, isn't it? At least it's supposed to be, before an agent of the executive branch, in this case the FBI, can execute this warrant. They must convince a member of the judicial branch that their warrant is valid, that it meets all of the requirements, which is why it's important that we have a chief executive that's appointing constitutionally sound judges, that they are held account, that they are held account for their behavior. Because remember, federal judges do not serve lifetime appointments. According to Article 3, Section 1, they serve during their good behavior. It's up to the representatives of the people and eventually the representatives of the states to make sure that these judges are behaving properly. And if these judges are rubber stamping warrants without probable cause, without oath or affirmation, or without specificity in what's to be searched and seized, well, then it's up to your employee in the House to impeach them, to come up with the evidence and make a case that is worthy to remove them from office because they are acting badly, not because of a single case, not because of a single opinion or a single warrant. But if we're seeing a pattern of behavior that is destructive of the rights of the people, your employees in Congress have the duty to initiate an to initiate impeachment proceedings, which is the charge, and then to have those charges tried in the Senate. Now, I have to take another break, but before I do, if you like this type of information, you want to hear more, then I ask you to join me and the other content creators at AmericaOutloud.com daily to see what's going on, to get news and views and happenings from different angles, different topics. It's more important than ever that we do our part, that we not only inform ourselves from different sources, that we look at the world from different points of view, but that we take the stuff that we find valid and that we share it. We share the stories, the articles, the videos, the podcasts, that we become part of the solution, not simply part of the problem. And the best way you can do that is by taking that information from AmericaOutloud.com and other sources, share it with friends, share it with family, and share it with social media so that we can continue to secure the blessings of liberty. And I'll be right back after this break.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Whoa, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. Today, we're looking for our new James Otis, men and women that will stand up against the manipulative use of warrants, the police state that America is, in many cases, I say has become. If not, we're certainly well on our way. Now, we've already talked about the use of warrants and the understanding of the use of warrants, understanding what makes a warrant legal, understanding what is a reasonable search and seizure. We've talked about the Mar-a-Lago raid. We've talked about the seizure of Mike Lindell's cell phone. And what's interesting is a lot of this seems to be coming down to the FBI. And the question is, can we trust the FBI anymore? There's been a lot going on here, but it's a new week, so there must be a new whistleblower, it seems. And there's a new whistleblower claiming that the FBI is manipulating the case files to make it seem like America has a larger issue with domestic violent extremists, or DVEs as the FBI calls them, than it really does. And at first I wasn't quite sure what he was talking about, but let me see if I can explain what I've learned so far. So this all revolves around January 6th. And it is standard practice for the field office for that location, in this case the Washington field office, to run the case and then to split off different parts of the investigation to different offices to deal with specifically local incidents, right? So, for example, if one of the people they're investigating, say, is in Ohio, they might split, you know, they might take a piece of the investigation and send it to that office to investigate that particular person. But the case remains in the Washington field office's purview. There's one case of, in this case, January 6th, that the FBI is investigating. Well, apparently what's been happening is rather than simply saying, yes, under the WFO's, the Washington field office's investigation, we want these other field offices to investigate, help us with this investigation, but the case remains in the WFO. Instead, it appears that they've taken hundreds of investigations stemming from this one incident and had them open to separate cases in different field offices. In other words, even though that there's one case coming out of the Washington field office, they're making it look like there are different cases in all the other field offices that may be participating in this one investigation. More cases means more, hey, we've got more instances of domestic violent extremism. We've got all these cases all across the country. Oh my God, our hair's on fire. What are we going to do? Now, is this simply a paperwork snafu? Remember, they've already had whistleblower allegations that the FBI is pressuring agents to reclassify their cases as domestic violent extremism, even if they don't meet the criteria. So we already have allegations of the FBI padding the DVE books, and you know, pressuring to have cases reclassified as violent extremists, domestic extremists. Is it really that hard to believe that they would be finding other ways to make it look like there's a domestic violent extremism going on? I mean, let's face it. If the FBI sees domestic violent extremism as their own hammer, everything they're going to want to look like, they want, looks like a nail. They want to beat it down. Now, according to the whistleblower, that means other cases are being deprioritized. Cases such as child sex abuse and violent crimes against children that are having agents pulled off of them to investigate these quote-unquote DVEs. Again, what appears to be a political witch hunt. Now, again, there's a lot of speculation. These are whistleblowers. I'm not saying they're wrong, but that's not proof. But there's certainly... And I would certainly say that there's enough probable cause to look at how the FBI is running their DVE investigations, especially the January 6th investigation. Is this being used as a political? Are they being used as a political hit squad or not? Again, not proof, but certainly something worth looking for. And it reminds me of when I had a FBI agent show up at my house to serve me with a subpoena. You know, I don't get chatty with law enforcement, not especially on my own property. How much are these agents going to be trusted? How much are you going to trust if a federal agent steps on your doorfront that they're actually there for what they say they are and something else isn't going on? Even if the agent that you're looking at is not directly involved, it certainly makes us more suspicious of law enforcement, to see them more like the Stasi or the Gestapo than those trying to enforce the laws of the United States. Now, before I go, I kind of want to circle back to our friend Mr. Otis and these the idea of warrants and the idea of not simply privacy. Let's face it, pretty much every one of us walks around with a tracking device on us. If you have a smartphone, you're being tracked. If you have a cell phone, you're being tracked. It's the nature of the 21st century. The question is, when is it appropriate for federal, state, and local law enforcement to gain access to that data? Which brings us back to the question of a reasonable search. See, the logic, and I've covered this, you check my website, constitutionstudy.com. I did an article on the third-party doctrine. And the idea from the Supreme Court is, once you hand data over to a third party, you have no expectation of privacy, therefore you have no Fourth Amendment protections. I vehemently disagree with that, but think of it this way. So you have a contract with a cell phone provider. I don't care who. Part of that cell phone provider is tracking your cell phone. You use apps that you've allowed to track your location. They're tracking that data. That's all private industries, right? Those are private businesses. Now, the government has said, well, that you have no right to privacy. You've already given up that data. But the Fourth Amendment doesn't say you have a right to privacy. It says you are protected from unreasonable searches. When is it reasonable for government to search about you? To search, again, these aren't necessarily your papers, your documents. But when is it reasonable for government to search? Can they search looking for things to go, that you've done that are wrong? Or do they have to have probable cause first? Should law enforcement be able to subpoena records from your cell phone providers or the companies that run any apps that you use for your data without it getting a warrant first? And, of course, I look at that. If there's no probable cause, then it's not a reasonable search. Government has the burden of proof. But again, we're dealing often with data that isn't actually our data, right? Your cell phone tracking data isn't your data. It's data about you. Your app usage data is not your data. It's data they've collected about you. If there's one change I would like to see in the Fourth Amendment, is to add two things. One is, you know, so it's got persons, houses, papers, and effects. I would like to also add documents, both physical and digital, or any information about you. That would include, by the way, medical records, credit card use, anything about you. They need a warrant to search. That's a change I would like to see made to the Constitution. Not sure anyone's really picking that up, but it's certainly something we should consider. But if your digital footprint is the nose of the camel under the tent, well, you know, it's the whole camel. It's this digital currency. It's this push to first regulate digital currencies and cryptocurrencies, and then eventually the push by the government to issue a digital dollar. This is the whole herd of camels under the tent. Because at least today, if you, let's say for whatever reason, you wanted some privacy, you didn't want people knowing where you are, what you were doing, or, you know, what you were thinking about while you were flipping through your Facebook feed, all you have to do is leave your cell phone home. Don't carry a cell phone. They don't track you. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing this for nefarious purposes. Maybe you just are tired of having everybody in government knowing where you are all the time. But what happens when you're dealing with a digital currency? Because now we're getting beyond simply surveillance. I mean, yes, surveillance is a large part of it, right? Because every place you spend money, see, right now, most of us use credit cards. They're easy, they're convenient. As long as you pay them off at the end of the month, they don't have a negative impact on your finances. I use them all the time. But I fully recognize that means that there's a record of everywhere I spend things with a credit card. Now, there are certain things, I deal with certain people, I pay in cash. Again, not nefarious. Maybe I do it because I don't want them to have to pay the credit card fees. Or maybe I do it because it's a small amount, it's not worth going through the credit card. For whatever reason, I can get cash, and I can use that cash however I wish. And the government knows nothing about it. Now, yes, the government wants to be told when large amounts of money are deposited, and I have an issue with that because, again, that's an unreasonable search. You're asking for them to provide information without probable cause. But what happens when every transaction is tracked by the federal government, is recorded by the federal government? You buy a stick of gum and the government knows about it. You buy gas, what happens when everything goes through a government-issued credit system, a government-issued money system? No anonymity whatsoever. There's none. It's gone. But those more nefarious-minded among us, those that look at this and say, what could be? What happens when every transaction requires the approval of a government actor? See, when you use your credit card, right, you stick your card in the machine and it says authorizing. That means the place where you're buying stuff, the merchant, is going back to the credit card company to make sure that this is approved before they actually make the sale. What happens when they're not going to MasterCard, Visa, and American Express, but they're going back to Uncle Sam? What happens when every time you spend a dollar, it has to not only be recorded by Uncle Sam, but approved by Uncle Sam? What happens when every transaction is monitored and approved by government? That goes far beyond writs of assistance. The tracking is a writ of assistance, right? We're going to track every movement, we're going to track every dime you spend, and we're going to know where you're spending it so that we can do things like keep track of, what have you been buying? You've been buying guns, you've been buying fertilizer, you've been buying whatever. But what happens when you actually need the government's approval to make such a transaction? Think that's crazy? Look at communist China. They're doing it now. Is it really that hard to believe that there are people in the United States that so want to control us that they would find a way to control every transaction that you make? What can we do? And this is where I want to come back to, we're not there yet. One of the things we can do is to learn about the Fourth Amendment, learn about your rights to be protected against unreasonable searches and seizures, and then enforce it. By the way, that includes not just the FBI, not just your local law enforcement, that is any government actor. Health inspector shows up, where's your warrant? Now, they like to play games saying, well, you waived that when you got your thing. I'm sorry, that was done under duress. I want to see the American people start taking control of their lives again, to pull back from government oversight over every aspect of our lives. A government actor is not allowed in my house without, period. If they have a warrant, I won't stop them from executing the warrant, but I want the proof. I want that warrant. I need to have it. I need to go over it with a lawyer. I need proof that it was a valid warrant. But I'm not inviting a government actor into my home. I'm not inviting a government actor into my business. The only way to protect ourselves is to learn when and how to stand up and protect ourselves. And yes, some of us may pay a price for it. You may open yourself to additional inspections, additional audits. That's one of the reasons why I say you need to have a constitutional sheriff and you need to be working with them so that they can help protect you. We have a precedent, we have history of sheriffs telling government inspectors, if you come here again without my permission, your agents will be arrested and charged with harassment. You need your sheriff to have your back. We want that local person covering us to help protect us against these bad actors. It's one of the reasons why I say we start local. Yes, we don't ignore Washington, but we have to start locally. We have to make sure that our sheriffs and our police officers and our deputies are protecting our rights. And then when someone's rights are infringed or attempted to be infringed, are we willing to go support them as well? Whether that means bailing them out of jail or being a witness or testifying in court or before a committee or just making it public. letting the public outrage be part of the process. We need to stop waiting for someone else to come protect our rights. We need to learn to protect our own rights. If we wish to live free, we must actually act as free people. And hopefully we can find another 100, 1,000, million James Otises, men and women who will pledge to their dying day to oppose with all the power and faculties God has given them all such instruments of slavery on the one hand and villainy on the other as this writ of assistance. Now hopefully you've enjoyed this. If you are in North Dakota, Idaho, or Wyoming, please check out constitutionstudy.com/tour. I would love to see you at one of these events. Remember, you can always invite me to come and give this talk at your event in your location. Just fill out the form right there at constitutionstudy.com/tour. And if you like this show, please share it with others. Let other people know. Weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, they can listen to the Constitution Study on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. You can listen on the website through the media player or on apps for Apple, Android, and Alexa. You can also listen on podcasts on your favorite podcast app, whatever app that you use, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, basically anywhere you listen to podcasts. And if you would do me a favor, subscribe to the show, but leave me a rating on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find me as well. You can find all the links on the homepage at AmericaOutLoud.com. But please, share them, friends, family, any way you can. Join us as we help to share the blessings of liberty to this entire nation, from sea to shining sea.